calling this meeting to order. So if our clerk could start us off with a roll call.
Let the record reflect that due to Chair Parra attending today's meeting via phone, Chair Pro Tem Brandao will be running the meeting.
Yeah.
Commissioner Brandao.
Here.
Commissioner Magsig.
Here.
Commissioner Santoyo.
Here.
Commissioner Yep.
Here.
Chair Parra.
I'm not sure if you called my name. I'm sorry. I set my alarm off. I don't know how to turn it off.
Can you place your phone on mute by chance?
Yeah, I got it now. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Fantastic. All right, thank you for the roll call. Let's all stand real quick and salute our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, and I think we have, do we have agendas posted anywhere for, they're officially posted out in the lobby then, okay, or a table in the back. So if anybody needs one of those. And the first item today, item three, is going to allow for comments from the public on any item that's not listed on today's agenda. And so you'll have 3 minutes if you want to talk about any item that's not already covered on today's agenda. So we'll go with that opportunity right now. Nope. Are these everybody here staff or part of? Oh, what's that?
FID
for that one item All right, perfect. So then I kind of know what the level of interest for these other items are. All right. So there's no comments from the public. We're going to move on to item four. Potential conflicts of interest. Any commissioners have any conflicts today? All right. I don't see any conflicts of interest today. And Daniel, if you want to chime in, just take yourself on mute. And even if you have to interrupt me a little bit, that's not a big deal.
Okay. No, I appreciate it. I got no conflict. Thank you, though.
Okay. Now we're going to tackle the consent agenda. So we have any members of the commission like to pull any consent items off the agenda? And I'll go out to the public real quick. Are any members of the public want to talk about a consent item? Then I'll entertain a motion to pass the consent agenda.
So moved.
Second.
All right. Madam Clerk.
Do we need a roll call vote?
Oh, we don't need a roll call.
Well, I think we do technically if Commissioner Parra's vote's going to count.
Okay.
So that was a motion by Commissioner Yep, second by Commissioner Magsig. Commissioner Brandao.
Yes.
Commissioner Santoyo.
Yes.
Chair Parra.
Yes.
All right. Item number six, municipal service review and sphere of influence update for the Fresno Mosquito and Vector Control District. And David, are you going to lead us in that conversation or?
That would be me.
Oh, so all right.
Yeah.
Thank you, George.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. So this MSR has been prepared in response to the sphere of influence update application filed by the district with LAFCO. The district is requesting a 365-acre sphere expansion into Madera County. This section of the sphere includes a portion of the San Joaquin River and two unincorporated parcels in Madera County. The site is located north of the river between Road 39 and Road 40. The district has historically maintained this area for mosquito abatement services, and the district informed LAFCO that this area is also within the Madera Mosquito and Vector Control District. So this proposal is a joint effort between the districts, and they're requesting LAFCO to simultaneously update the spheres of influence for both districts in anticipation of the reorganization, which is going to be the next item on the agenda. The reorganization would memorialize the district's respective service area and accurately depict where Fresno Mosquito is using some of the revenues to provide services to that area of the river. Madera LAFCO has granted Fresno LAFCO the exclusive jurisdiction to process the district's applications, which entails the reduction in the sphere and the service area of Madera Mosquito Abatement District. It's anticipated that Madera Mosquito and Vector Control District will undertake a similar proposal later on this year. Madera LAFCO would be the lead in that project.
Okay.
The MSR provides the analysis on the district services, its programs, and the purpose of this proposal. Staff recommends the commission to update the municipal service review and update the spheres of influence for the both agencies by entertaining three separate actions. The first action would be find that the MSR is exempt from CEQA. Second action would be find that the SOI updates are exempt from environmental review. And action three would be adopting the written determinations proposed in the draft MSR. Staff is here to answer any questions, and also Mr. Ryan McNeil, he's the district general manager for the Fresno Mosquito and Vector Control District. This concludes my presentation.
Fantastic. And would you like to add anything at this time about this item or make yourself available? Do we have any comments or questions from the commissioners? Yes, Nathan.
Just a general question, and this would be for the district manager. So I know with the district itself, you collect assessments from property owners, or is that correct? And so all of that has already taken place for this new area that's coming into your sphere?
The APNs in question are owned by the state of California. The San Joaquin River Conservancy is the on-file custodian for those properties, so there is no tax revenue being generated.
There is no tax revenue being generated by those properties.
So with this action, how is the state paying for the service they're going to get?
Through our property taxes, there's two sources of income revenue that we as a district have are through property taxes through Fresno County, as well as the benefit assessment. Because of our historical service to this area, we would like to just be a little more accountable and transparent for using those funds within our own jurisdiction. And so being able to use existing funds, which is really a benefit for the area in general. If you, in that area that's highlighted, in the area that's highlighted, there are a vast number of stagnant pools and ponds that are in those APNs, and a significant number of mosquitoes, based on wind patterns and trap counts that we have, blow into Fresno County over the river. For some reason, mosquitoes don't understand county lines. Mm-hmm. And so, a tremendous amount of sources of disease of these mosquitoes are blown into the area of the Bluffs and North Fresno. The vast majority of all of the work that we do, service requests that we provide, et cetera, are in this general area or come from mosquitoes that breed in this area, and we would like to really be able to treat and take care of that accordingly.
The only concern that I have is when the district was formed, it was the boundary lines were created and assessments collected to provide a benefit to that geographic area.
Correct.
And I can appreciate the fact that there's a significant amount of mosquitoes that are being generated in this area because the existing property owners, State of California, River Conservancy, you said?
They're the custodial owners, correct.
They're not maintaining their property appropriately. Have you identified what you believe the cost would be to provide the service to deal with this large mosquito-generating area?
With the items that we already have in place with drone capabilities and other things that we have, it would be very minimal cost. I don't have an exact number for you, Supervisor, but it would be an extremely minimal cost just given what we do and the benefit that would be generated to the residents of Fresno County, and specifically those in that upper portion of the city, would be tremendous. And of course it would be those benefit assessment funds from them that would be benefiting those residences.
Have the property owners been notified that are directly going to benefit from the sphere change and the services rendered, that some of the property taxes collected may be used to subsidize this area that wouldn't be paying property taxes?
There have been notifications going out about the services that we provide in and around the river. There are approximately 450 letters that we sent to residents letting them know that we would be treating areas specifically in these APNs. We have heard no negative feedback. No one has said they don't want any drone use or anything of that nature. There are no specific landowners or residences within those APNs, but those that would be benefited by this work have been notified.
And then again, have you approached the state to see that they, you know, if they could cover, I recognize maybe it's going to be $10,000 or $20,000. Who knows what that de minimis amount's going to be to you know, to treat these areas? Have you approached the state and said, hey, can you guys just contribute a little bit since, you know, there's a lot of mosquitoes being generated from your property that you're managing?
We have not approached the state. However, along with the mosquito and the disease portion of this, the second, I guess you could call nice to have, Supervisor, is that if this were to be approved by you and the commission, we would be considered to be a multi-county district. With that multi-county district, specifically, well, let me just back up here. In the 1992-1993 legislative session, the California legislature, in order to fill a gap in K through 12 school funding, proposed what is now known as ERAF, the Educational Revenue Augmentation Fund. Essentially, a multi-county district is exempt from having an ERAF shift of funds that is sent to the state to fill that gap. If this were to be approved, along with us being able to treat these areas within our actual district boundaries, our ERAF shift of approximately $1.1 to $1.2 million every year, this upcoming fiscal year, it's just over $1.2 million, would stop being taken from our coffers, and we would have those funds to not be able to just serve the people of Fresno in this area, but through our entire districts, Kerman, Biola, and all the unincorporated areas around the greater Fresno area.
Okay. Very good. And was that, I don't remember seeing that in our staff report, so that clearly is a very large benefit for maybe a small expense that the state wouldn't be paying.
It would be a very large benefit to the people of Fresno and Kerman and the outlying communities, yes. It would be allowing us to not just treat, not to just prevent disease, but to enact a large number of additional services that we will be able to provide to the community and keep local tax dollars local.
Thank you.
I think one of the previous presentations had something how the Mendota or Biola Kerman areas were being affected by this also. Because I just saw the map here that had Kerman on there, so I just wasn't sure if we've addressed it in the past, but it just wasn't on these forms. The issue of there's going to be some coverage in the other smaller outlying communities as well.
Our district already covers Biola Kerman. We go all the way out to West Lassen Avenue as our furthest boundary. This would be a huge impact, not just to the residents near the river, but our entire district, the entire area. Mm-hmm.
It may be, Commissioner, that you're recalling there's a similar boundary swap that's proposed further downstream to have the Madera District annexed territory in Fresno County. So that may be what you're
right.
What that's you're recalling. Yeah. That wouldn't be part of this action, okay. But that is considered to be something that will happen in the near future.
All right. Any other comments from the board? I'll just officially go out to the public for any comments on this item. I don't see anybody. So let me ask George or Mr. Price, can we take all three actions at once, or are they all individual?
Yeah, the rules regarding CEQA approval have changed, and so you have to kind of break them out this way.
Okay, perfect. So I'll take a motion for action item number one, please.
Yeah, so for action item number one, guidelines to find that the MSR prepared for the district is categorically exempt from the provisions of CEQA under section 15306, information collection. I'll move for approval based upon the explanation of how the ERAF shift and the benefits to the district financially far outweigh any subsidy that will be provided to the state.
I'll second that.
Okay, yep. Thank you, Mario. All right, we have a motion and a second on item one. Madam Clerk.
That was a motion by Commissioner Maxig, second by Commissioner Santoyo.
Yes.
Commissioner Brando.
Yes.
Commissioner Yep.
Yes.
Chair Parra.
Yes.
All right. And then let's go through item number two. Do I have a motion and a second for item two?
I'll make the motion for action number two.
All right.
I'll second that.
Motion by Commissioner Santoyo. Second by Commissioner Yep. Commissioner Brando.
Yes.
Commissioner Maxig. Chair Parra.
Yes.
Fantastic. Fantastic. All right, finally, action item number three.
I'll make the motion on action item number three.
Thank you, Gary.
One second.
Nathan. Madam Clerk.
Motion by Commissioner Yip. Second by Commissioner Magsick. Commissioner Brando?
Yes.
Commissioner Santoyo?
Yes.
Chair Parra?
Yes.
Madam Clerk, even though we had two commissioners make the motion and second the motion, I think for the record we need to have them actually vocalize in the affirmative on the motion itself.
I'm sorry.
So yeah. When you did the roll call, you only mentioned the three non-motion makers.
Uh-huh.
So that making the motion is not technically a vote in the affirmative. You could make the motion and vote no. And so if you would just ask the two motion makers to on their vote.
Got it.
Yeah.
I would be an aye on both items we've identified.
I would be an aye on
Thank
the
you.
Two.
I would too.
Yeah, we went through that in the Kerma City Council. Our legal attorney said the same thing.
Yeah, everybody does it differently. I agree, Mr. Price. That's the way it should be, because there's even been times where I've made a motion and then voted no. And so it happens occasionally. So I think we'll just ask everybody from here on out.
And don't worry, Amanda, you're doing great.
Yeah,
so
totally.
Actually is my fault. And the reason I know it is my wife has told me that anytime something goes wrong, it's my fault. So I apologize.
We can blame it on the attorneys also. It's right. Easiest.
I'll take responsibility.
Yeah.
Hey, she might be right.
Okay. Item number seven, consider approval for Fresno Mosquito and Vector Control District reorganization. And Juan, I think you're going to lead us through this one.
Correct. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the Commission. The Fresno Mosquito and Vector Control reorganization is 100% consent reorganization and uninhabited. As George mentioned, this reorganization was processed concurrently with the MSR and the SOI update. The proposal is consistent with CKH and the Commission policies. Therefore, staff recommends approval by entertaining the two separate actions. Action 1 would cover the CEQA component, letter A, in the staff report, and Action 2 would cover letters B through E in the staff report. And that concludes staff presentation. If you have any questions, I'm available, and we also have Ryan with the district available.
Thanks, Juan. Any commissioners have a question on this item? All right, how about members of the public? Any comments or questions? All right, I will bring it back up for let's tackle action item 1, the CEQA component. Do I have a motion to approve?
Make the motion to approve.
A second.
So motion to approve by Commissioner Yip.
Yes.
And second by Commissioner Santoyo.
Yes.
Commissioner Brando.
Yes.
Commissioner Magsig?
Aye.
And Chair Parra?
Yes.
And I'll make the motion for action item number.
Oh, hold on a second. Don't we still want to take? Yeah. So what Mr. Price was just saying is, even though these two made the motions, we still need to ask them for their vote.
They said yes.
Oh, they did.
Yeah,
all right.
I said yes after I made the motion.
However, I do want to go back.
Wait, we need to put a hole in the glass right here so you can hear.
Do you want it red? Do you want?
No, okay. I'm good with that. And maybe I missed this, but on agenda item number 6, we approved action number 1, and we approved action number 2. Did we approve action number 3?
Yes.
We did. Okay.
That's the one you weighed in on.
I just want to make sure we had that clear. Okay. No, I understand. I was just going back.
All right.
I'd like to make a motion for action item number 2.
Fantastic.
I'll second.
Madam Clerk.
Motion to approve by Commissioner Yip.
Yes.
Second by Commissioner Magsig.
Aye.
Commissioner Brando.
Yes.
Commissioner Santoyo.
Yes.
Chair Parra.
Yes.
Fantastic. We're getting there. All right, item number 8.
We still have to go through have we gone through all the actions on 7?
Yeah.
Yes. Just two actions.
Action 2 had B, C, D, and E included.
Right.
Yeah.
We'll blame it on the attorney.
D Do you need your template back, David?
I think we're all used to Zoom at this point.
All right. Item number 8. And who's going to lead us in this presentation?
I will.
All right.
Chair, members of the Commission, this is the proposed budget and work plan for fiscal year 21-22. Commissioners will recall that they considered the preliminary budget last month, and we will be considering the final budget next month. So this is a receive the report and provide direction as necessary. The proposed budget is estimating that that revenue will close this year higher than our projections, and expenses as a whole are projected to close under budget as well. Staff is working on a basis of expenditures approximately $42,000 to $44,000 a month, depending on what's happening. And I know we're going to have some revenue that hasn't been accounted for in last month's books. So this budget is still a work in progress. So any advice at this point, I would recommend that not be focused on a dollar value, but perhaps direction or magnitudes of change, since we're I'll still be working on the budget all the way up to the next meeting. Anyway, we're going to close under projections this year, expected to, and next year, 21-22 budget is going to be approximately $638,000. That's an increase of approximately $36,000 from the current budget. And this budget also maintains the practice of maintaining an operational reserve of $100,000. We also have a litigation reserve, approximately $50,000 as well. The final budget and work plan will be presented next month. This budget and work plan was distributed to all of our local agencies, cities, special districts, and the county CAO in accordance with Cortez and Oxhertzberg. So office operations, the contributing factors to close at approximately $20,000 less, a lot of it is COVID. There's a lot of expenses that weren't incurred, primarily related to CalAFCO activities. The annual conference was not included. We didn't have the staff workshop, so those expenses were not accounted for, were not expended. Personnel, we're going to come in slightly below. Our consulting services, we're going to shoot a little bit lower there, too. And as the commission may recall, our contract bookkeeper is now a temporary employee. She's going to be retiring this year, and we will miss her. She's actually done a lot of good work for the commission in terms of her diligence and her capacity as a bookkeeper. So we're going to rely on her to help us find a suitable replacement as well. But we need to have a bookkeeper, and so we have an expense line item for that. It's going to continue to next year. Revenue, we're looking at a revenue of that matches our expenditures, approximately $638,000. This is a city-county contribution of approximately $206,000 respectively, $85,000 in application fees, and fund balance contribution of approximately $140,000. Now, I have used a very conservative fee revenue estimate of $70,000. Looking back, it appears I could go a little bit higher. So I'm proposing $85,000 next year in fee revenue. It's really tough to call. I recall my predecessor when I came on board suggested we set the cities down here in front of the commission and have all the cities say what they think they're going to do next year in terms of application to LAFCO. I think, and I've done a great deal of outreach to the cities to find out what their annexation needs are. On the other hand, you can bring a horse to water, but you can't make them pay the fees. So I have a long list of projects that I know are in the pipeline. I just can't tell you what fiscal year they're going to show up. So I still try to stay conservative in my estimate of fee revenue, because with that fee revenue helps to reduce our total operating expense and then makes the allocation that the cities and the county pay reduced. But I'm a little hesitant to go too much above 85 unless I know for sure that projects are coming in. But I did raise it by approximately $15,000. Now, the budget is in place to support the commission's work plan. And work plan includes this year our biennial audit, which is an expense of approximately $10,000. We do one per our financial guidelines every 2 years. And it is of that year. It's not 2 years worth of audit every 2 years. It's 1 year worth of audit, but we pick every other year to perform an audit. So far, there hasn't been anything brought up that really needs to be replaced, except that I can say when I started, we were still going through the growing pains of emerging from being a county department to being an independent agency. So the issues that the auditors in the past have brought up have really been related to accountability and not necessarily parties weren't accountable, but there wasn't a clear line that was drawn from, say, receipt of cash, how long we keep materials in our safe before we deposit them, et cetera. So those items have been brought up and have been cleared up over time, and I'm happy to report that the audits have found no major issues to address. Knock on wood, they keep finding that. So that's approximately $10,000. We're looking, part of our work plan is to process applications as they come in the door. That is what we try to do on a timely basis. As a matter of fact, if we have applications, they take priority over programmatic work. We have customers that come in that need something done sooner than later, and we don't make them wait in line for our, say, the programmatic EIRs, or excuse me, MSRs. So we put the applications at the front of the line. Juan is the manager of the annexation applications, and George, if we get a sphere of influence change, then he's the one who's managing the municipal service review and the sphere analysis. And I'll talk a little bit more about the about our MSR program here as soon as I get through the work plan. I've also discussed, and the commission has agreed to have a subcommittee review a comprehensive update of the Fresno-LAFCO policy manual. And I've been working through some draft changes to orient myself so I can bring the committee of Commissioners Magzig and Santoya up to speed. I was advised to keep the meetings as few as possible, and I get it. But I also want you to know there's a lot there's a lot to talk about. So I figure that part of my job is to digest as much as possible to make sure that I can give the committee the support it needs to make decisions and recommendations to the larger commission. And one of the things I'm considering is that perhaps breaking our policy standards and procedures manual down into a policy manual that deals directly with the essentially the operating instructions for sphere changes and annexations and changes of organization, breaking that out from, say, procedures such as conduct of the commission, et cetera, and keeping those separate so we can keep these documents somewhat leaner and more accessible to the public. Because when I get a call from somebody in the public or the development community or a local agency, they say, what about this? I'll say, well, it's in our policy manual. They go to it and they go, it's too much to read. So, you know, I'd like to make it easy on them. I'd like to bring the rest of the community into the work that we do here, and making this document more accessible and more streamlined, I think, will be something I'd like to propose to the subcommittee. And finally, I'd like to bring to the commission's attention the fact that if you've been reading notes, you know that I'm kind of tired of working in downtown. As I was leaving the office the other day, I saw a fella shooting up I'm sure it was a prescription medicine, but he was standing outside the car wash, now defunct car wash. It's sort of a hub of the homeless community. We saw somebody shooting up next to the drug rehab or drug testing emporium over by the jail. So downtown has really become a harsh place to work. Our building is locked. Any of our clients and customers and interested parties need to actually call us ahead of time. We don't have security at the door. Commissioner Magzig was kind enough to suggest we could move into the county plaza. When I made the call to facility staff, they said that the Public Works and Planning had already staked out the territory, and I'm not going to go up against Steve White. I'll tell you that right now. I like Steve, and I'm not going to wrestle him for that. But the staff I was talking to was also very helpful in observing that the county has a great deal of real estate that may have there may be an availability for us to sublease or lease from the property owners the square footage that's accessible to LAFCO. One of the troubles we have in this staff is, as small as we are, it's difficult to get some of the larger or some of the benefits that a larger agency would get. If we had 150 people, I'm sure there'd be a lot of territory. But if we're talking about a staff of five and we only need 2,000 square feet, there's a lot of commercial opportunities that aren't available. But there may be available office space that the county has. That fellow, this fellow's name escapes me, the one I was talking to, but he said he was a friend of yours. Yeah, that's it. And anyway, so he went on, and I said, tell you what, let me bring this back to my commission, get some direction. I'm not necessarily looking for a green light on this, but I wanted to bring it to your attention, and I'll have more details in our next meeting about what these opportunities might be. I've also already got some communication lines to a commercial real estate broker, so it's not as if it's one or the other. I'd like to be able to try both the commercial side and perhaps county resources if they're available. But I'm somewhat optimistic that we can find a pretty good deal. But I've put $5,000 in for general expenses related to the move, any new office furniture, any new supplies, et cetera, essentially capital type expenses that would support that. So that's essentially the work program. Here we are. So let's look at this graph here. Now, as you can see, by virtue of including 2007-08 in our in the data that was analyzed here, our budgets have essentially been dropping very slowly. I think overall, as an average, if we take out, say, up to 2009, the LAFCO budgets have been creeping up a bit. And I would attribute most of that to just basic personnel expenses over time. Next slide, please. Now, here's another graph I wanted to bring to your attention. This is when I took the projected fee revenue for these fiscal years and compared that to the actual fee revenue. And one of the reasons that I decided to move that conservative 70,000 number up to 85,000 was the actual fee revenue is shown in the green bars and the dotted line. That fee revenue is increasing. I'm still not ready to go out on a limb, unless so directed, to go above 85, but I think we're looking at we're not going to shoot under it. Next slide, please. And as it relates to city-county allocations, they're somewhat even over the years. Again, this is between 07 and as proposed in 2021. So the city allocations, city and county allocations have been relatively level over the years, although they have gone up or down. Next slide, please. So that was just some thumbnails related to the budget. Commissioner Santoyo suggested that I provide a brief thumbnail sketch on the background of our municipal service review program. Now, again, we have application activities, and then we have programmatic activities. If we don't have applications, then we are 100% committed to the MSR program. So the commission adopted the current MSR policy in 2014, and the goals were explicit: to provide cities and special districts with an assessment of their provision of services. That's kind of obvious. It's a municipal service review. But I think the proof is in the pudding that we're taking a far more, I don't want to say assertive stance, but we're taking a far more, maybe we are assertive. We're not aggressive. We're assertive. We're asking these parties to participate. Many of the first MSRs noted that the district did not participate. In fact, we've had a lot of hang-ups. I'm not going to give that information. I don't know who you are. Click. And so retrospect, that doesn't serve the public's interest. And it really doesn't serve that district if it believes it can just shut the door on an inquiry related to public records. So we're taking a much more assertive role, and it's really knocking on the doors and making sure they understand this is the law that we're following, and the local agency is also obliged to render these public documents to anybody that asks. So we're making recommendations regarding areas of improvement. One of the questions, I believe it was Commissioner Magsig, when he was on the commission previously, asked the question, rhetorically perhaps, of where's our hammer? How does LAFCO make somebody do something or make an agency follow the recommendations? And the answer is that LAFCO has, it's kind of like a rope. You can pull it, but you can't push it. And so we don't necessarily exercise authority over the behavior of agencies, but the municipal service review process is a way of helping those agencies who might otherwise not know what their obligations are, both in terms of their principal act and in terms of other things like Brown Act or compliance with Public Records Act. So our assessment of their provision of services is not just the conclusion, but it's a process related to working with them to bring them up to a certain level of performance that is established by the law. And finally, to make a determination whether an agency is equipped to effectively provide services within its existing or expanded sphere. Many of you were here when we were going through the cemetery districts. And the cemetery districts, some of these had huge spheres of influence. And yet when we asked the district management, when do you plan to grow? Oh, we don't have any plans to grow. I don't know where that thing came from. Okay, well, the sphere is the commission's plan for that agency's boundaries and where it expects to provide services. And if an agency doesn't expect to grow, then the commission took action to shrink their sphere to reflect that agency. So the work that the commission does is really a reflection of what that agency intends to do through its own planning process.
How often, David, when has that happened last, that LAFCO has shrunk the sphere of an agency who kind of over-predicted or over-projected or was unable to fill their growth?
Yeah, I would say the cemetery district MSRs was, and I'll look to my staff too, I think that's the last time we did something on that level.
Yeah, I think it was Oak Grove Cemetery District out in South County. It was maybe 2018, November, somewhere around that timeline. And it was a huge sphere. It accounted for a lot of the areas heading towards like the Kalinga area. There's also Kalinga Huron Cemetery District, but this district, the SOI followed an area that was like a wide area that wasn't covered by a cemetery, and they didn't have any plans to annex, so it was shrunk. And the district agreed. There was no benefit for them to annex either. They wouldn't be generating additional tax revenues, so
okay.
They were okay shrinking.
Is there a policy or, you know, I'm still getting myself up to speed on everything, policy-wise, but what about a city, you know, that makes just massive, huge plans and then never fulfills those plans and then ends up changing their strategy to an infill plan? Do we just leave that sphere massive out there for infinity, or do we ever reel it in and say, no, let's reexamine that?
Well, that question was asked in 2015. And when the commission was considering the municipal service review for the city of Fresno, and one of the commissioners, it was Commissioner Prey at the time, said, I remember being on the city council when SEGA was proposed, and then the wind left the sails, we had a committee. Were you on it? Yeah, I thought so. The committee was Commissioner Perea, Commissioner Santoyo, myself. And the notion of reducing the sphere was opposed very vigorously by many different parties. There were some builders who had sort of banked on that growth, and whether or not that growth was going to occur in a timely manner, the builder's portfolio essentially presumed that it would. And so it brought to the commission's attention the fact that when a sphere, especially for a city, which is much more dynamic than many of our special districts, whenever a sphere of influence is proposed, it needs to have something behind it more than a wing and a prayer, because there are a number of forces out there that will go ahead. Well, State Center bought territory in the south part of SEGA for its police fire. I forget the other agencies that really put in, Sanger Unified had plans, Fresno Unified had plans, Flood Control had plans. So when this commission adopts, pardon me?
Clovis Unified had plans near
there as well. Yeah. So all these agencies see the sphere and say, okay, well, the commission adopted it. We're gonna make our expenditures. And then, so the notion of removing SEGA or reducing it was vehemently opposed. And as a result, the commission took no action on that.
And that was 2015?
Yes.
Well, you know, times change. So maybe it's time to look at that again. I mean, I get approached by developers that would prefer to develop outside of said city.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's a call for the commission to provide direction on.
Just was interested in that.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I've got some questions related to this item. And just real quick, so I'm a little lost on the numbers. When I'm looking at the 2021 budget that was approved, it was a little over $600,000, $602,000. And there's savings that were realized, which you talked about. In the 2021 budget, looking at revenues, you speak of a carryover balance of, I believe it was $182,250, right?
That's what was adopted, correct.
And and there was a lot of savings from the budget we currently are under. And so when we're looking to adopt this next budget, you've increased the cities and counties' contribution by roughly $25,000, a little bit more than that, mm-hmm. for each. So they'll be contributing around $412,000 this time. But you're also identifying that there'll only be a fund balance contribution this time of $140,000. So where I'm confused is, if the overall budget from last year to this year really has only increased by $30,000, and we had tens of thousands of dollars in savings in this year's budget because of reduction of activities, mm-hmm. why is the carryover balance, why did it shrink by $40,000? It should have grown, in my estimation, exponentially.
Well, exponential, I like that. Well, if you'll also notice that the overall expenditures for next year are approximately $36,000 more.
Yes.
So I would be happy to provide the detail as soon as I get back to the office, but I will provide the detail to the commission on each of these accounts, and that may answer the question. I was anticipating a question like this, and the overall, we're looking at each of the expenditures, office operations, personnel, and consulting services are all looking at their own changes as well.
So I use the term exponential because, and maybe it's just a definition of what that carryover balance is. So as I look at carryover balance, I assume what's wrapped up into that is the reserve. And also the $50,000, you say there's $50,000 set aside for attorney issues, $100,000 in reserves.
Mm-hmm.
So at 182, I assume, but maybe I'm assuming incorrectly, that part of that 182 is the 150 that's set aside for litigation.
No, that is not included. That's separate.
So is carryover then just unspent previous year savings?
Mm-hmm.
So I would make another suggestion. Because that number has gotten so large and it's exceeded even our reserve right now stands, just looking at, we spend $44,000 a month in payroll and other mm-hmm. costs. I would suggest that we go from roughly a 2.25 month reserve to maybe a 6 month reserve to consume that carryover, because that carryover amount really should have grown from last year to this year, too, so I don't know why it's actually shrunk, since we haven't increased reserves last year or increased litigation expenses, if that makes sense.
Okay. So we have a pretty simple budget. I have a bank account, and I keep track of, you know, money spent and revenue. And from that account, and I'd be happy to share these sheets, data sheets with the commission, but from that account, I set aside the $100,000 and we have the $50,000 in another account altogether. So of my operational account, I've got $100,000 I simply put aside, and then I have the fund balance is what I'm managing month to month. As I get closer to the final budget, then I start using an average expenditure, and I reduce that by the amount of months that are left in the fiscal year. I also set aside, I don't know if this is where you got it, but it's very close. I usually set aside a 2 to 2.5 month reserve to carry us over into the next year, because even though we work with the county auditor staff and they're very good about their role in this, once I have an adopted budget, I give it to the auditor staff and they then apportion the amount to the cities and the county. We get the county share very quickly, but we don't get the city's share as quickly. That's 15 different agencies that will cut that check at different times. So I usually have a reserve there that reduces that portion of the fund balance is also looking at the reserve for the next year.
So what I'm getting at and looking at all these things is
is that what you were identifying?
Kind of, yes. Yes and no. But what I'm trying to do is when we do approve the budget, I need to have a true understanding of the net position and then how you're allocating, how you allocate. So if the reserve isn't even a part of any of these numbers and it's completely set aside, which is fine, I think I just want to take a look at all revenues that we have on hand and then what we plan on collecting, because it looks like you're planning on collecting close to the $638,000. And this particular year, we spent around $550,000. So as I approve budgets, I just like to see exactly, categorically, where all the money is that we have on hand and if it makes sense to, in this case, I think it does make sense to increase our reserves. But I can appreciate having a carryover balance that we maintain. We call it something different because the only time you can really tap reserves, as I understand it on anybody, is it takes a 4/5 vote. So it's sometimes when you have flexible funding in different pots, it doesn't require action by this board to grab a hold of those dollars. But just some, I'm thinking out loud as I'm looking at the numbers.
I appreciate that because this budget has been the product of the interaction of your executive officer and the commission. So if the commission is fine with what information they're being presented or they want to see changes, then really it's my job to be responsive to that. And maybe that's maybe we can have a discussion offline about the nature of the reserve. We have a small contingency, which also requires a commission approval. It's $3,000, and again, that's mostly just office furniture if something big breaks, and we don't have much big to break. So, but it's always been there. So, if the question then is to fine tune and dial in the commission's understanding of the its staff's budget, I'd be happy to share those Excel sheets with you and talk about
and
this
part
to
of the,
give
part
you
the
confidence
the
level.
Method to my madness around all this too is right now. I wouldn't even call it we're in a building boom, but because there's lots of constraints out there, material constraints. My concern is there's going to be a bust at some point. What happens if we have zero revenues coming in, and then we have the 15 cities out there saying, look, we're not processing any maps, we're not interested in annexations, so we're not going to pay nothing. So now we've got $206,000 that falls off. So to me, right now we're in a period of time, to the extent that we can bolster up our reserves a bit to help carry us. If we run into a time like that, I think it would be wise. That's what's behind all of my questions.
And just remember that the commission has the authority under statute to go to the county treasury and collect what's owed.
I wonder what that would look like in the media, especially when a city can't pay, their bills. That'd be tough.
Well, the commission did authorize the executive officer a couple of months ago to proceed on that very course of action with one of our cities.
Right. So, is that the one that began with a P?
Yep.
Yeah. So, all right. Very. I'm glad it worked out, though, in the end.
In the end, it did. And would you like me to provide you with this information?
Yeah, so just our financial position, what you have. It should just be a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
So I can take a look at it, and then that's all.
Okay.
Give it to all of us so we can all look at it.
Okay.
Any other comments or questions?
Yeah, I have a question. David, can you refresh our memory? When does the current lease for the building that we're in now expire?
January of next year.
Okay, so, and what type of direction were you generally looking for from us just to continue pursuing your exploration, or is that all you're looking for?
Yeah, I recall, and the reason I'm looking for something specific, at least in terms of general direction, is that when LAFCO moved its offices from Kern and Van Ness back in 2010 or so, I think it was 2010, to the current location, at that point the commission had a very strong, let's stick in downtown, we're a community on the go. I'm here to tell you, after working downtown for 8 years, I'm ready to leave myself. For purposes of peace of mind and the safety of my staff. Amanda was accosted by a homeless person as she walked out to her car. So if we have to, either we should move or maybe buy some brass knuckles. I'm not sure what. But I wanted to make sure that the commission, if there was any interest on the commission's part to not move out of downtown or any preference to a preference one way or the other, that I brought this to the commission's attention before I came back and said, hey, we got a great place somewhere else.
So just a little history. This is not the first time this has come up. We've dealt with this in the past, but we were pretty well tied into the lease term. And so it sounds like we have an opening coming up that I would just encourage commissioners to listen to what David's is saying, because in prior commissions, we probably would have done something had we had more opportunity to have done it at that time. So
I'm just looking for some general feedback at this point before the commission makes a final decision next month.
I think I mentioned at our last meeting of getting involved, and maybe, Nathan, I didn't follow through, and maybe you jumped in and helped out on some of that. But I think we can ask around about county properties and find out a little bit more. But but my direction would be to continue looking. And I don't know about my colleagues, but I'm not married to downtown myself. So I think unless everybody feels, or the majority feels differently, then I would say don't narrowly focus on downtown specifically.
I'd say go look what's in the best interest of the organization, and I'm not sold in downtown myself either. So health, safety, welfare, that's a basic thing, and a good snack bar. Fine.
Maybe take a look too at F Sarah, their new facility. They just sold a building, but they may have capacity, which at some point they're going to grow into that. F Sarah is the Fresno County Retirement mm-hmm. Association. They just built a facility about 2.5-3 years ago, right off of Knees and Ingram, and it's a nice location, but they also have a boardroom in there too. So they may or may not have 2,000 square feet. I have no idea, but just give Don Kendig a call. Okay. Tell him I asked you. And you can also talk to this guy because he's counsel for that board. But the chairman's a jerk over there, so don't talk to him.
This is very difficult.
Yeah. Talk to him.
We moved offices, would we still use this chambers for the general meetings?
That's up to the discretion of the commission.
But then if we did that, we'd have to somehow get an audio system and phone systems in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be an expense. And we'd also have to make ADA compliance and availability of the public. So it doesn't mean that we couldn't continue to use the board chambers thanks to the largesse of the board members. It's convenient for you and convenient for us.
I like this location because it's in walking distance from my office.
Think about yourself, why don't you?
All right. Anything else?
Well, I'll make it brief. Can I get to the table? Next slide.
Yeah.
So the bottom line with the Municipal Service Review Program is that the commission has approved several generations since 2007. And that's a 1.0, that's the first generation. The 1.5s that were getting a little bit better, but the 2.0 MSRs are the ones that have been produced by your staff under the 2014 MSR policy. And we're making pretty good progress of the total municipal service reviews that need to be completed, 132. Wow, that seems like a lot. Of the total that need to be updated and completed, we've made some significant progress on the special districts here, 117 special districts. Of those, 42 are at the 2.0 level. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that they have to be done on a regular basis, but that could be in the next generation of municipal service reviews. We could be looking at something, just checking their sphere, making sure it's adequate, if the data, maybe updating the data in the MSR. So I see this as kind of a pig through the snake analogy, where we're spending a lot of time to get these municipal service reviews to a certain level, and also working with the districts to make sure that they're performing at the level expected by statute. So that's what we've got. That's what we've got under our belt so far, and I give a lot of credit to the staff for making it look easy. This concludes staff's presentation.
All right, and I don't think this is an action item, But are there any other directions? Nathan, you want a spreadsheet? And then I think the general direction is to keep looking for new place and don't limit yourself to downtown Fresno. Are there any other comments at this time on this item? Anybody from the public want to comment? Bill, do you have any office space to offer up over there, maybe?
Well, we are thinking about converting one of our older buildings, so.
Well, there you go. Fantastic. All right, then we are going to move on to item number 9. And, Bill, I think that's why you're here. And thank you for learning everything you can about mosquitoes and our office space needs. But we have a presentation from Fresno Irrigation District General Manager on the Fresno Irrigation District Detachment Policy.
Yes, good afternoon, Commissioners, and a lot of familiar faces, Supervisor Magzig, Brandow, Mayor Yup, Commissioner Santoyo. It's been a few months, or longer than that, actually. And David Fye, thank you so much for the invitation to hear us or have a workshop today. Also with me is Ms. Cassie Chahan. She wears many hats, if you know her, but she is the North Kings GSA Executive Officer, and she also is a Special Projects Manager for the Fresno Irrigation District. And so why we're here today, FID recently passed a policy, which is essentially, is back in March, and it was essentially to, thank you, we have slides up. Essentially to detach cities that were not historically within the Fresno Irrigation District. And so I'm speaking very specifically of the cities of Fowler and Sanger. So currently within the boundaries of FID, we have the cities of Fresno, Clovis, Kerman. We have communities of Biola, Malaga, Pinedale, Easton. And so throughout this discussion, I'll talk about cities that are historically within and those that are not within. And so, you know, a couple things. What triggered this was going back, 10, 15 years ago, we started having discussions with Sanger, Fowler, and they were looking at their growth patterns. And I don't know exactly when they adopted their sphere of influence, but it extended north into the Fresno Irrigation District. And so over the years, we've had some discussions and not really sure, you know, what arrangements we were going to have. And then in 2014, that's when the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act was passed by the state. And that got us thinking a little more of how we're going to interact with the cities and communities within FID. Historically, FID, going back into the 70s, FID had water service agreements with the cities of Fresno and Clovis, but not the other communities. And so as we talked through this with staff and our board, and through the GSA, we started thinking about, and all these communities like Kerman and Biola and Malaga, they all said, you know, we want to do our part, and we, whatever that means. And Fresno, FID, you have the water supply, and currently we're just pumping groundwater, so what is it that we can arrange? And so we're early on in those discussions. This is a little bit off topic, but it's tied to this whole discussion. So we're in the middle of those discussions, early discussions with those cities. And so then it came to Fowler and Sanger. And so what we said was currently those two cities have water supply agreements with the Consolidated Irrigation District via the South Kings GSA. So that's hopefully not too convoluted, but that's what the arrangement they have today. And you know, it might have played out here in front of LAFCO a few years ago, but it took a few years to get those cities and the irrigation district CID to those agreements, but they have them. And essentially, FID doesn't want to be a competitor to CID to supply water to those two cities. We are arm in arm right now with CID, Alta, our brothers and sisters on the Kings River Water Association, We're fighting for our water rights up at the state of California. CID and FID and ALTA-ID, we were like this. And we just don't want to get in a situation where cities or other municipalities could pit us against each other. And the way CID, the arrangements they have with those cities, those agreements look and costs for water is significantly different than what FID has with cities of Fresno and Clovis and probably what we'll work out with Kerman and Biola and others. And so after a lot of thought and discussion with our board, we decided that the best way to handle this is to detach. We used to call it de-annex, but we learned from Dave over there that the term is detach, that we'll detach those parcels as they are annexed into the cities of Fowler and Sanger. And if we could switch to the next slide, please. And so what, you know, how big of an area are we talking about? So this map does a good job, but what's in gray, that's the Fresno Irrigation District boundary or area. What's in green is CID. And what's in red, kind of in the lower left, that's Fowler as it grows into currently FID. That would be 600 acres approximately, their sphere of influence that lies currently within FID. And then with Sanger, it's approximately 1,325 acres, their sphere of influence that lies currently within FID. So you combine those two, it's just shy of 2,000 acres. You know, as those areas, again, as they're annexed into the cities, we would detach. I've had both Cassie and myself, we've met with the city managers, their city engineers, with both cities, and they understand what it is we're doing and why we're doing. And by the way, I should mention, what we're proposing is very common with most irrigation districts in the western United States. They typically detach as the areas urbanize or transfers from a more rural setting to an urban setting. That's not historically what FID has done with Fresno and Clovis. I would say we're very unique in that situation. So how we're planning to handle Sanger and Fowler is very, very common. And when I did reach out to specifically talking to the city managers, they understood it. Their concern is water supply, to be real frank. And they, as they heard my explanation, they said, well, we kind of assumed that you might go down this, or FID might go down this path where we would get detached. But we do have concerns about water supply. And so I reached out to CID, the general manager, Phil Desitoff, talked to him on several occasions. And, you know, that's something that they have an arrangement and agreement to provide water to those cities. And I was asked, well, if detachment is one issue, but the water supply is a different, if for whatever reason CID or the South Kings GSA is unable or is not willing to supply these areas water in the future, would FID be willing? I said, well, for right now, we want you to work with your partner, and your partner is CID and South Kings GSA, and if for whatever reason you guys can't work something out and you want to have a discussion in the future, 5, 10, 15 years down the road, sure, we'll talk about that. So they understood that, and we passed our policy back in March, and talking with Dave, we had a draft policy, and he made a few suggestions that we adopted. I think 100% of those suggestions, he asked if we could come here today and make a presentation, just let you guys know what we're planning on and why we're doing it, and it's new. It's a new process for FID, so it's helpful working with Dave. And we want to make it a very automated process. As soon as those parcels are annexed into the city through it would just be an automatic process that they would detach. And so I think we've got all our bases covered, but maybe I'll stop there and open it up for questions.
Perfect. Thank you, Bill. Supervisor.
I have lots. Are you ready?
Yeah, let's hear it.
So you've created a policy for them to detach, but you're not changing your sphere line, correct?
That's correct.
So how can CID provide water to them? That would require an extraterritorial agreement, and I believe they'd have to come before us, where one entity is providing a service outside of their sphere of influence, correct?
It could. It could. If it's a replacement, then it could be exempt. If it's a service being provided by an agency that by agreement is going to be provided by another, then it doesn't have to come through LAFCO. But you do touch on an interesting question regarding the future spheres of influence for both of the affected irrigation districts.
So effectively what you're doing is you're creating a wide area that if CID can't service, and I'm thinking lawyers would love this, and they'd love to sue and stop projects over this very issue. And hopefully the city managers have thought about this. But you create a wide area that technically doesn't have water available to it, and looking at the Groundwater Sustainable Management Act, anything that's built, anything you pump out of the aquifer, you got to put back. So if you have no means of surface water now because you've come out of irrigation districts, you're effectively a wide area and under the jurisdiction of the county, then the county of Fresno's got to figure out how to create this water balance plan. We have a few wide areas in Fresno County that are very difficult for us to deal with, and now effectively we might be creating 1,600 more acres of wide area. Have you talked to the county and their position on what they think about this? Have they raised any concerns like this to you?
I did talk to Bernard Jimenez, and he did raise those concerns, and which I understand. You know, one of the things you touched on was creating a wide area, kind of that's a language that Cassie and I live with, understand very well within the GSAs. And originally we wrote the policy so because the North Kings will essentially detach as well, these parcels, and we wanted it just to automatically roll into the South Kings GSA, but we were instructed that you can't do that. We can detach, but some maybe Dave, if you want to say it different than the way I'm saying it, that ultimately South Kings would have to accept it. But in our discussions with the cities, they weren't too worried about that. You know, as far as providing water, I'll just keep going back to the CID has water supply arrangements and agreements with the South Kings and those cities now. So, you know, one of the things that to get into the weeds a little bit is similar to the issue you brought up, Supervisor Magzig, is that FID does have canals that go through that area, and they will remain because there's downstream usage within the Fresno Irrigation District, and those will need to remain either as an open channel or as a pipeline. So it may work out, and I've talked with CID about this, that CID exchanges, we do an exchange or transfer, and we actually deliver water. If, let's say, Sanger wants or Fowler wants to put basins in those areas, we may end up conveying that water. And that would be a three-way agreement. We would work those details out. I'm not worried about that. CID is not worried about that. Those two cities have those concerns, and we talk through that.
So again, my concern is water balance, and that area you've identified in Sanger, that is all business park area they've identified. So the way I see it, at least in the short term, you've made that area impossible to develop, in my opinion, because if just like we were talking about the Southeast growth area, remember, I think there's an agreement that the city of Fresno has with FID that there are areas that have type 1 water, areas that have type 2. And
right.
I believe
growth area 1 and 2. That's
yeah,
correct.
Most area in growth area 2, or a lot of the area in the Southeast growth area is growth area 2, which they've got to identify their own source of water, I assume, before they can truly develop, right? That effectively makes a lot of land undevelopable unless you can go out and get water rights. So I assume right now it's the detachment only occurs with this new policy once the land is annexed into the city.
That's correct.
So, as a another hat that I wear is being on the Board of Supervisors. Some of that area is in my district, but in a way it almost forces me to try to go back to the city of Sanger and negotiating a tax sharing agreement with them, saying, don't annex this, let's partner and develop it in the county, and then I'll do an extraterritorial agreement for sewer. We'll stay in FID, because as we develop these parcels, they already have water assigned to them, and we'll use that water allocation. That way we can develop these sites, keep them in the county. But again, if my concern is if the cities grow their spheres and they haven't really thought through some of these issues, they're ripe for a lawsuit, and they'll lose, in my opinion. And we have an attorney right here. I mean, do you see any issues or challenges with what I'm describing?
No, I mean, I understand what you're saying. Do I think that something like that could result in litigation? It's possible. And I think ultimately, at the end of the day, this is kind of where LAFCO comes in, though, because LAFCO has to make a determination on extraterritorial agreements. LAFCO has to make the determination of development within incorporated areas of the county. So I do think you properly raise it as an issue, but I do think also if there's cohesiveness with the leadership of LAFCO, I do think that it can be addressed.
Is there any way to not only do the detachment from FID, but talk to CID and see if we can change CID's sphere? Because if CID's sphere then covered these growth areas and FID's area shrank with the detachment, then I don't see any issues, because it wouldn't create a wide area. And since these agreements already exist with CID, you don't even need to deal with the extraterritorial agreement then at that point either. So is that a possibility?
Yeah, mechanically, if the red flags that you've observed, Commissioner, if those could be addressed through a formalized process, could be a separate policy that basically says when an application for annexation is submitted, it is presumed to include a detachment. We could also be looking at amending the spheres of influence of both the CID and the FID and resolve this. Now, that brings some other questions, but I guess it's possible if all agencies moving forward are in harmony with the expectation, then, we could conceivably do a sphere change with every annexation.
There's one more fly in the ointment, and that is the North King GSA and South King GSA. Those boundaries have been set and approved by the state. Are they open and willing to modify those boundaries? Because effectively, to do what I just described would require the modification of those north and south GSA boundaries moving forward.
Yeah, I'll let Cassie speak to that.
Yeah, good afternoon, Commissioners. Thanks for taking this item up with us. We have looked at that, and essentially, the way the South Kings GSA was formed, it takes into consideration growth amongst the entities, and those are strictly the municipalities within CID. So as those lands come out of CID or FID and are annexed into the city, they become part of the South Kings GSA. So that is considered in the development of the GSA boundary. And we have looked at closely the CID and South Kings GSA agreement between the two agencies and confirmed with our legal that is in fact what will happen. So we don't feel like that's a concern. Like Dave pointed out very clearly, we can't just put that into an FID policy, but that's the way it is written with inherently through the CID and the South Kings GSA policy.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I have a couple of questions too.
Yes.
Okay.
Commissioner.
So I'm being familiar with Phil and Consolidated ID, and also being familiar with lots of the rural cities and their level of water expertise, and also having some level of knowledge of the difficulties that occur between the cities and CID in reaching an agreement, I see some pitfalls in the future that could happen, which leads me to where Commissioner Nathan was referring to, is that there could reach a point where there's, once again, disagreement. And so it would be troubling for the cities to be put in a position where they don't have an assured water supply. And so I would be backing basically any effort that can be done to provide their greater surety for the cities not to be put into that position. I understand exactly where you're coming from, Bill. You know, there's no, I get it, you know. And I don't know if there's a way of doing it, but I think we should fully explore some way of trying to do that, because I just have my reservations in terms of longevity between the cities and consolidated ID water supply. And so I guess when this is brought back to us, I think it would be good to have Phil here to have his input on this matter also, so that we can kind of know a little more from him and what his long-term thoughts are in this thing when they bring it back to the commission. And so, I mean, that's where I'm at.
Makes sense.
Chairman.
Thanks, Barr. I'll just reiterate, I'm not signing on an agreement right now, but what I've tried to say a few times is that they'll have the opportunity. They have an agreement with Singer and Fowler today. If for whatever reason, they can't work through those past issues, other issues that can't foresee now, then FID is willing to sit down with those cities and talk to them about providing that water supply. And then if not FID, then there's other players out there too. We would prefer them not go that route because CID and FID is in their backyard. So I understand the concern if I was in your guys' seat as well.
Limited exposure as mayor, people fight over water for some reason. I don't know why.
So, for a long time.
Share my thoughts, Mr. Chair. This is the reason I wanted to have the policy discussed in front of the commission, because as an independent special district, this was the FID's prerogative to manage its resource given the environment that it's working in. And I think both Bill and Cassie are sensitive to the what ifs. And if the commission so directs staff, I will just continue to work with them, and perhaps we can work on a framework that becomes a bit more predictable, bring it back to the commission for thoughts, and whether it's approved or recommended for some change, because this is new territory for everybody. And Sigma has, I think, was it Churchill who said something about the atomic bomb? It changed everything but the way we think. And this is now one of those things that is going to change the way that we all operate in our respective realms when those realms overlap. So if the commission would like, I could continue to work with Bill and Cassie and maybe plot out logistically how this could work, what the pitfalls might be, or what the issues related to LAFCO might be, and also include the cities, the other district, and just keep this, keep our fingers on the pulse.
One last question on this. So, you know, when annexations take place, typically you have willing or unwilling property owners too. And right now, as I understand it, when you live in the rural areas and you have parcels, there's an assessment that property owners pay, a FID assessment. So if part of the annexation is going to trigger a detachment, what happens if someone who owns land who wants to develop it in the city and the annexation takes place, they're being forced to give up something that they've been paying for? How can an agreement that wouldn't be with the property owner but with the city, how is that enforceable? Couldn't they come back and take action against FID saying, you know, wait a minute, I've lived in FID. The only thing that's changing here is I'm developing my property, and at this point, FID is detaching from me, and I've been a good faith payee within the district. So this agreement or this policy that you're working on, Is that something that your legal counsel has thought through as well? Are there any rights that the property owners have that have been paying these assessments all along, any rights that they have?
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. I mean, do you have a vest? Do you have like a built-in account, if you will, by virtue of paying assessments? The answer would be no. Do you have a protest right to protest a detachment? Yeah, you would if you're being detached. Also, LAFCO has a tremendous amount of conditioning authority too. So if LAFCO is concerned about the allocation of assessments and sort of a clean process of detachment, LAFCO under the Cortesian-Knox-Hertzberg Act can condition its approval on an application under that kind of thing. We'd have to work it out, but it's possible.
Hey, Ken, let me ask you this question because it triggered a different thought. Part of it is when we were going through that SEGA issues is that there's probably no other people that are get more animated than the developers. Okay, and so my thoughts are, if a developer wanted to develop an area that once was covered by FID and now is only covered by an agreement with CID that has a lifespan, how does that come into play in terms of approval of those developments? Because I know that we've always looked at long-term, you know, guarantee of water supply before we approved developments. Do we run into that kind of issue here?
You have to make a finding.
Yeah.
And that's also has to be evaluated from a CEQA perspective as well. You know, normally, I'm not, as long as I've been doing this, seen our commission approve something that would base a fundamental service based on an agreement that's outside of a corporate boundary. I think that's pretty unusual. If it's outside the sphere and it has to come to the commission by virtue of an out-of-area service agreement, although that's been administratively delegated to your executive officer, you know, there are certain findings that you have to make from a LAFCO perspective, including that there's an imminent health concern. So I don't think a new development would ever meet that standard. So I think that's pretty unlikely, and I think that's kind of what Commissioner Magzig was saying, that here come the lawyers to sue on something like that, because it would be a real problem.
Takes us back to you working with Bill and to find an answer to achieve everybody's goals in some fashion.
I support that too. You know, Mario, as a direction, this is not an action item, but we can provide direction here. So I would support that too.
Yeah, I have no problem. I enjoy my professional relationship with Dave Fye, and I look forward to working with him, Phil Destoff, and city managers Fowler and Sanger, and work through whatever it is we need to work through.
I'm going to ask if Commissioner Parra is on the line, because we're talking about Fowler. Commissioner, and so wanted to know if you had any thoughts or comments on this item.
Well, I'm going to be going back and meeting, because we have a separate GSA, and it took a lot to form that, and it was a lot of infighting, especially with CID, and I'm not sure if this is covered or if they're going to come back to us I'm not sure if this is going to be the third or fourth time to raise our rates with them, and we have to pass it on. So I'm going to take this information back and to Lozano Smith, who's our attorney for the GSA, give him that information and give the contact of the gentleman speaking so that not only the city, but they can be involved also. I think it's better if I just pass it on to the folks that have been working on it.
There you go. Well, with you looking out for Fowler and Supervisor Magzig looking out for Sanger, we'll probably get our bases covered there. But, Bill, we get where you're
– also.
Okay. Bill, I get where you're coming from too, though. And so it's, you know, it's a complex little issue, but we deal with those from time to time.
Yeah, I understand.
So I appreciate you coming today.
Yeah, appreciate you giving us the floor to talk to you about this and just run this by you. And it's new for us. It's new for how we interact with Singer and Fowler. And Sigma, with Sigma, created a whole new world.
The policy, has it been adopted, so you're already operating under it, or is it something the board will, your FID board, will be voting on in the future?
Our board did adopt it back in March.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Yeah.
I think one thing just to consider, I agree we will continue to work with Dave, and it's been a pleasure to get his insight on these things. But one thing to consider that we took very seriously was we didn't want to leave anyone high and dry. We know the fighting that occurred to get the water supply agreement. We know the history of why the South Kings GSA was formed. We did consider all of that, and we left the door open. I mean, that, I think, is the number one thing that the city was concerned about. They did not want to be left high and dry. We gave them example comment letters. They're used to this type of process because, as Bill mentioned, it's very common when cities grow for the irrigation district to detach them. So we feel like we've covered all of our bases, and we certainly are going to continue those discussions. But the premise was we didn't want to leave any of those cities high and dry, Singer or Fowler. We didn't want to put CID in a bind. And we wanted to keep the long-standing relationship that we have with those two cities open for future arrangements if needed. So just wanted to add that. And then in terms of the water budget, you know, this detachment takes place when those areas are annexed in. And when they're developed, that is a net yield, a positive yield, because they're going to use less water on developed land versus ag land. So we've also taken into consideration the water budget piece, which is very important for the world that I live in. So just wanted to add those additional comments and make sure that the commission knows that those opportunities are definitely still there, and we're very interested in, you know, if there comes a time when there's a need, to making sure that we can help our neighboring cities out. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. Anything else? Well, thank you, Bill. Bill, I'm going to reach out to you on a completely different item.
Okay.
But seeing you today reminded me of something I thought about a couple weeks ago. So thank you for coming today.
Seeing you guys in person.
Yeah, right?
Very rare we have meetings like this, so thank you.
Yeah, thank you. All right. I think that was our last item of the day, right?
Yes,
yep.
Sir.
So do we have any commissioner?
I think you have executive officer comments.
Oh, we love you today, David. All right. Any other comments before we adjourn? All right. Daniel, any comments before we adjourn?
No, just thank you for coming. I really appreciate it. I'm sorry I had to be out of town.
No problem. We'll catch you next time. Thank you. All right. We'll adjourn today's meeting then. Do we vote on that here?
You have a motion.
Yes,
okay.
Need a motion.
I'll take a motion.
I'll make the motion.
Second.
All right.
Madam Clerk.
Do we need a roll call? We don't need a roll
call. You
don't
need a roll call for
a
two.
Okay. Now there's a nice compromise, Ken. Thank you. All right, we're adjourned.
Bye-bye.